A beacon shining in the night, faster than a bolt of light, cloaked but hiding in plain sight.
Their mission, to help the Green Arrow fight the darkness, corruption, and bring hope.
We are strong.
We are many.
We are the Arrow Squad.
Hi, this is Stephen Amell.
Hi, I'm Juliana Harkavy, and you're listening to Arrow Squad with Cammy the Chameleon and my favorite, Martin the Flash.
And listen to this, or my fictional alter ego will hunt you down. Enjoy.
Hello, Arrow Squad. We are back after all that crisis craziness. Hi, Cammy.
Hi, Flash. It is good to be back on Arrow, or is this Arrow?
Yeah. Well, we will talk about that. It was a different episode. It was the backdoor pilot for the possible spinoff, which hasn't been greenlit yet. So we'll talk about that. But we want to cover some crisis stuff first, because we got some direct feedback to Arrow Squad about the crisis event. A lot of people want to share their feelings and thoughts. So we're going to go through that first and respond to a little bit that this is kind of more an Arrow Squad, I guess, discussion, because you guys heard, by now you would have heard the big crossover podcast stuff, but we wanted to talk a little bit more direct Arrow related things, eh, Cammy?
That sounds perfect to me. We'll just kind of go over that the way we would normally go over pre-show feedback. Mm-hmm. It'll be our crossover feedback, and those crossover feedback pieces did pile up. It was so fun to read what Arrow Squad members thought about it, and I'm excited to go through it, but first, should we go over just some quick news items, you think?
Yeah, I think you had a couple things here, sure.
Yeah, so I won't give any spoilers, but I will say there's some new casting announcements for the Green Arrow and the Canaries spinoff piece. Ooh. And as Flash already touched on, there's also some crossover special podcasts that we were on, the GSM one. We were also on the Flash TV Talk one, I believe. And in terms of special episodes, we're also working on an Arrow finale special episode. Isn't that right?
That's right. And we've mentioned it a couple times before. We started bringing it up last season, and then we've mentioned it this season a couple times. Before Arrow finale's out next week, and before we do our regular podcast, we are going to be doing a very special episode that's all about Arrow and Arrow Squad, and we want feedback from you. It's basically going to be a feedback episode, and we want you to tell us what Arrow has meant to you and what being part of the squad has meant to you. We want you guys to open up, be emotional, be very forthcoming about what all of this has meant to you to be part of everything. We've watched the show for 8 years. This is your chance to say farewell to the show, to the characters that we love, and to all your fellow feedbackers here. Me and Cammy are going to say what this has meant for us, and we've got a lot of feedback in already for it, so just remember, get that in. I guess we'll post on the Facebook page exactly when that's going to happen, when we're going to be recording that, so you guys have a deadline, but just know before the finale next week.
Yeah, I'm already seeing some come in. We had one just come in today, actually, tonight, and it just warms my heart reading those already. So I'm excited to go through sort of our special episode.
Yeah, exactly. All right, well, let's get into some of the crisis feedback, and I'm going to lead it with this little thing. There we go. All right, where are we going to start, Cammy?
Let's start with an email from Dad L, and it's actually two emails back to back. He writes in to say, "Hello, Crisis Squad. I'm going to start with a modified recap of the intro from my feedback on the first three episodes. This is the most ambitious crossover ever, and I know there have been some strong opinions on the events that we have seen, and I'm going to try to focus on what we got and be positive, except for the horrible Bebo cameo. This crossover is incredibly ambitious, and I can't imagine how hard it is to bring all of this together for the writers and showrunners. Of course, I don't always agree with their decisions, but I have to look at this as an incredible gift. Never would I have dreamed that in 2012 I would be watching Green Arrow fight off shadow monsters, become the Spectre, and restart the multiverse in a Crisis on Infinite Earths adaptation."
Yeah, that's putting it lightly for sure.
Yeah, they definitely honored the spirit of the original Crisis series. The details are different, but a lot of the story beats are the same. And I like the Speed Force montage. It's a creative way to relive some of Arrow's most important moments. Much better than a clip show. And Oliver died a second time. And after restarting the multiverse, what more could a hero accomplish? This was the pinnacle and the moment that belonged to Oliver with a Care Bear stare. Hope you get the reference. Assist from the others. Oliver's second death was a twist, as I expected him to simply leave this earth in his specter form when the crisis was over. But he has to be in some form somewhere, as we've already seen Felicity go to him in the future with the monitor's aid. Does that future still exist? And now the multiverse is reborn. Even though I don't watch all the shows, it's going to be great having all our Arrowverse heroes on the same Earth. The Marv Wolfman cameo was a nice touch. And what a nice send-off for Brandon Routh's Superman. I only wish we had gotten more. I don't even need a streaming show. A spin-off comic series would have been awesome. And finally, we end with the Super Friends in the Great Hall of the Justice League. I can't think of a more fitting end. He then adds in a separate little, oh, wait, one more thing I forgot. He says, Oliver died as the Spectre restarting the multiverse. Some of this was very contrary to the ethos of what was the most grounded, gritty, and realistic CW show. And don't forget, this grounded show gave us The Flash in season 2. I've come to a different place, and here are my thoughts. Because Oliver was a superhero without special abilities, he was perfect for this. He earned it. He's fought alongside incredibly superpowered beings and kept up with them at every step and sometimes even surpassed them. He's fought against unbelievable threats with no special powers, but he is special. He's shown incredible skill, determination, and heart. He didn't become a superhero through a lab accident or a yellow sun. He is a self-made superhero. That made him to be the one to restart the multiverse. My final rating for the entire crossover is 7.5 out of 10 lit sparks. We call these shows the Arrowverse, and now they are literally just that. Dad L, last father of Krypton.
Oh, I like how he ends that. They are literally just that, Arrowverse. Because yeah. Arrow created the verse that they are in now. That is a perfect final touch on that, Dad L.
Yes, it is.
Huh. I have to agree with a lot of what he said. I think he highlights a lot of the more positive moments. I had a lot of things I was disappointed with in this crisis. It was not my favorite crisis they've done. If you guys really want to hear me dive in-depth discussion with Jess, go over to our Tomorrow's Legends podcast. We did do a final four, part 4 and 5 discussion from a Legends perspective, but we did talk about everything. I don't want to get into it that deeply here again. So just check that out, guys. But I'm just upset with some of the things they did with Oliver. And even after watching it a second time, I'm still not happy with the choices they made regarding him. And just the way Arrow is coming to an end. I've wanted so much more for Oliver than the way they've shaped him. And I think me and Cammy will kind of talk about it a little bit more as we go through this.
Yeah, absolutely. But as feedback goes, mm-hmm. Dad L, you are absolutely on point and really thoughtful, kind of deep dive into why they did what they did and what the positives are. So you have set a high bar for our feedback. And you want to take the next one, Flash?
I will. Yes. Thanks for that, Dad L. Like I said, you put some nice touches on things that I was a little bit bothered by. So good turnaround. Next one is from Comic Geek Kev. And let's see what he says. Just got to watch the finale of the crossover, and I'm honestly not sure how to feel. Oliver dies again? Or is he still Spectre somewhere? Or is the Spectre back to Corrigan? Or someone else? Maybe we'll see Oliver again down the road as the character? Certainly in the Arrow finale in some way. I understand there's absolutely no way to stay true to the comic book, but the tired, if we all just concentrate enough, we can pool our emotions, souls, powers to defeat the bad guy. They could have at least had some kind of effect showing that Oliver was drawing on the Paragons in his fight with the Anti-Monitor. And what was Ryan Choi doing in the fight against the Shadow Dudes? I do like the character, though, and look forward to seeing more of him. Okay. He is so touching on a lot of things that I was griping about. So definitely check out my Tomorrow's Legends show. He goes on, the actual final episode I liked more. I was wondering how they would handle the merging of the populations from the previous episodes, but here is my understanding. Our heroes are now all on one Earth. So many issues there, but I digress. When they rebooted the universe, they actually rebooted a new multiverse, hence the other worlds, a whole Green Lantern universe, plus Alan Scott, Green Lantern on Earth 2, bring it on. Obviously, we've kicked the 52 motif to the curb and aren't even pretending that was a thing. Seeing the Titans, Doom Patrol, Swamp Thing, JSA was awesome, and knowing that Brandon Routh Superman lives is amazing. I always felt he never got a fair shake in that role. I didn't see Lucifer. I'm really interested to see if and how the ramifications of this merge in the individual shows. I hope they use it and don't just blow it off. Seeing the JLA Flash was cool, and seeing Marv Wolfman and the mention of Perez Landing was awesome. Gleek was a nice little touch when we see that the abandoned facility is the Super Friends Hall of Justice. All the musical nods were great. Overall, I loved the crossover. There were just a few issues I had. Some of the dialogue, ugh. But I'll watch it again, and I'll continue to watch all of these shows and any crossover they want to make. I'll miss Arrow like crazy, but at least these shows go on. I give the Crisis on Infinite Earths crossover 7 out of 8 members of the Arrowverse JLA, only because Oliver wasn't there.
Aww, 7 out of 8. That's good. A good rating.
Yeah, pretty good. I like how he brought it down to how many members were sitting around the table there, so very, very cool. Yeah, I'm with him on some of the things he said as well. I agree with a lot of the complaints, but I think the way they ended it with the round table in the Justice League Hall, I mean, that's just all fun stuff. That's just pure right out of cartoons fun. So I was happy with that.
Well, thank you, Comic Geek Kev. Mm-hmm. And I was so happy to see that Kate also wrote in her thoughts, and I'm going to go ahead and steal this one and read it out.
Go for it.
She said, hey guys, so this crossover, like most of the previous crossovers, was not for me, but I'm okay with that. 6 out of 10. Historically, I've not liked the crossovers except for the Crisis on Earth X, and that's not to say they're bad. I think they're definitely directed towards comic book fans, which I am not. I don't like how the events of the crossovers affect Arrow overall. And this year, I've been frustrated with how the final season has been a preamble to the crossover, but I was accepting all the weird stuff with the positives. We got the Mia and Oliver relationship development and the reflective look at the previous seasons, really highlighting how much Oliver has changed, but it also incorporated a lot of things that Arrow typically stays away from, such as time travel and dimensional stuff. Mm. And earlier in the season, I was able to let that go in the hopes that the crossover would be an epic payoff. But I wasn't as thrilled with the result as I'd hoped. There was minimal Oliver time, especially for a crossover that was supposed to say goodbye to Oliver. And in the first 3 episodes, he died, and then we got 2 more super quick scenes showing how easily he was resurrected. And then in the 4th hour, we had the Arrow episode. I thought that section started off pretty strong, with Oliver appearing as the ominous specter and guiding the other Paragons through their journey. And when the Paragons are split through the Speed Force and Barry has to find them, there was a great potential there to exhibit one more time what a positive force Oliver was in everyone's life. But instead, it was mainly an excuse to have the DCEU Barry show up, which had zero plot purpose and probably drained the production budget so much that we ended up with Walmart brand Dementors for the Shadow Demons. The end of that episode was so anticlimactic, with all the heroes doing the Care Bear stare from 3 miles away, and somehow that helped Oliver defeat the Anti-Monitor. Except he didn't. Oliver died for the Anti-Monitor to return and the rest of the heroes to realize that they can just shrink him. What? And this was all after the fight with a giant Jell-O Bebo?
Oh, Kate, I love you right now.
And part of me wants to believe that was supposed to be just as much of a distraction for us as it was for the heroes. We aren't supposed to focus on the fact that Oliver really could still be alive. Because in the scene with the bunker, when Sarah shows up, there are several possibilities that are thrown out but immediately shot down. It doesn't mean they aren't possible or some other possibility is true. Yes, he died, but he isn't dead. Which Oliver is dead? Why couldn't Felicity find him? All of these were hints. And I wish to remind everyone that we still have the backdoor pilot and the finale. For most of our questions or concerns, there's still time left on the clock, and I think there will be a satisfying resolution. The crossover just reaffirmed my belief that the show would have been better served if it had ended on 7/22, season 7, episode 22. Mm-hmm. Without Felicity and this show's tendency to be more grounded, it felt hollow, and I don't want to throw away the time me and Oliver got. I do still have questions if season 8 was really worth it, though. I mean, the crossover wasn't all bad. I loved all of Mia's scenes with her sass and charm, and I was happy that the other heroes were finally forced to admit that Oliver was the best, that he sacrificed the most, to the point of sacrificing his life and happiness to save others. I also like that it forced Sarah to take leadership. In the crossovers, I always thought Sarah or Oliver would have been a better leader than Barry or Kara. Overall, the crossover was kind of what I expected, but not what I had hoped for. I still have hope in the finale, and I'm excited to see what happens, but I'm bummed that the crossover was not better. Kate.
Kate will especially enjoy what I had to say in our discussions on my other show. I am feeling exactly everything that she was saying there. I complain about all the same things. So yes, way to go, Kate.
Kate always summarizes my thoughts and feelings so well. I actually have to go in and write down all my notes first before reading her feedback, just to make sure I'm not just spending the whole time being like, well, exactly what Kate said, what she said here.
Too funny. Well, awesome, Kate. Thanks so much. Next up, we got an email from Dudu Gaisler. And he says, hey, Arrow Squad, how are you? And how great is it that we all live on the same Earth now? I just finished the two final episodes of The Crisis, so where should I start? I've heard a lot of complaints about Oliver died in the first episode and even wasn't in the second. But in the end, he stopped the Anti-Monitor by himself and created the new Earth. He ended up the most important character of the crossover. Nobody's going to complain about that. Although the death of Oliver, it was a perfect season for him. He gets to know his kids, he had closure with his past, and finally he gains respect and honor not only from Star City, but the entire world. You know what, I'll agree with that last line he said, definitely. Where was Laurel? It's so weird she didn't appear in The Crisis. There are still two episodes of Arrow. I think Mia will be the center of those two final episodes. Oliver may appear as a ghost, and of course the return of Felicity. Can't wait. Now about the crossover, it was very good. I think it was the best crossover yet. I was shocked to see Ezra Miller as the Flash. It was so cool, but then it reminds me that I wish the DCEU was like the Fantastic Arrowverse. I can talk all a day about this crossover, so I just want to mention two more things. First, the Anti-Monitor sucks. No doubt he is the worst part of the crossover. There was nothing interesting about him. And second, John Cryer is the best Lex Luthor ever, and I'm glad he had a big part in The Crisis. What is going to be in the next crossover? Bye-bye for now, doo-doo. Oh, yeah, I was agreeing with some of you, and then you said John Cryer is the best Lex. I just cannot agree with you there, but that's okay. We can all have our feelings.
Everybody's the best to somebody, right? Everybody's exactly. Somebody's favorite.
Yeah, I mean, if you listen to our big crossover podcast, that was one of the things I talked about, especially in the Smallville scene when we got to have the great Tom Welling back. John Cryer's Lex just could not hold a candle to the screen presence of Tom Welling. It was not a good matchup. I really wish we had Michael Rosenbaum in that scene.
It was interesting to see in the crossover all of the different characters from different universes, even frankly, the Ezra and Grant Gustin scene. It's interesting seeing them present in the same room, even in cases where one has more charisma, charm, or screen presence or stage presence than the other, getting a chance to actually see it is really fun.
Yeah.
Unexpected.
Well, thank you, Dudu. We got a voicemail from Phoenix. Let's see what they had to say.
Aloha, Central City Underground and Made of Steel and Arrow Squad. This is Phoenix calling from Hawaii. I figured since we're having an infinite crisis, we should have everybody from the fandom come on in. So I've broken my hiatus to give a bit of feedback on the crisis. So I hope everybody's having as much fun as I am. I am feeling mixed about what we've been seeing so far, but overall enjoying the episodes. So overall, my episode reviews thus far, I'm giving 8.5 death cows for the first episode on Supergirl, and 6.5 Muddy Waters for Batgirl, and 8.0 comic cover homages for our latest episode. I must say that so far, I'm feeling like the overall crisis plot line is getting lost with a lot of just kind of superhero angstiness from all of our shows. I think that all of the Ollie leaving the Arrow stuff, I mean, we haven't even had an Arrow show yet, and we've already had him die and get revived, and then his soul not want to revive into his body, and all this has happened, and we haven't even had, you know, Arrow show up yet. So it's all kind of weird, but I feel that this is a lot of screen time that was in episode 2 and episode 3 that kind of could have been devoted towards Crisis. So that's kind of for me. The second was Batman. Holy crap, that was a bad Batman. Oh my lord. I wish that we could have had a stronger Batman. I'm okay with him being a twisted version of himself, but the acting was subpar. Glad at least that Batwoman got a lot out of it. But still, it was just not what we wanted to see after waiting so long to see him. And Black Lightning. Oh, I'm so heartbroken. What does this mean for his show? His whole world destroyed? At least Batwoman was found on Earth 1, but for Black Lightning, I'm really worried as to what we're going to see for poor Pierce. So, we'll, I guess, find out when his show comes back, but that's so, so strange. So, I'm happy to hear Snart on the ship, though. His snarkiness is very funny for Ship's voice. We'll see where the Paragons are going with this. I would have liked to see more Martian Manhunter, though, especially if he's one of the Paragons. So, overall, I'm enjoying the back and forth between Batwoman and Supergirl. I think that they've been pairing really well together. I know we saw a lot of that last year with our crossover, and it's continuing. I hope to see some mini crossovers with them, maybe a 2-episode arc or something. That would be great if we pulled the shows back together for some more mini crossovers instead of all this big, huge, you know, large crossovers. Let's see.
Oh, I guess that's the end of his voicemail. He must have cut off in his timing there.
The universe ended right then.
Right there, yep. Boom. The antimatter wave just went right through his planet.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Phoenix, it is awesome to hear from you. I loved how you opened it up saying it's time to bring everybody together for this big crossover. You have a couple really strong points in there, and I'm going to agree with you about the disappointment in the Batman that we did get. Not what I was hoping for, and I did not think that his name slipped my mind. I just didn't think he's a great voice actor for the animated series, not a good screen actor. I thought his performance was just awful. You got something you want to add, Cammy, to what he had to say?
No, I appreciate what every person kind of saw in it. And what's interesting to me in each of the feedback pieces is that everyone has different favorites and least favorite moments. There's, you know, some patterns and consistencies, but the crossover was reaching a really wide audience. And we see that in the feedback that we're getting back as we're getting even for this, you know, a wider set of feedback. And while I can kind of sit and read through each piece and say, well, I agree with this and disagree with that, I think I appreciate what comes together for each individual person more so than, you know, well, this feedback is exactly what I thought and this one's nothing like I thought. It's very individualized, everybody's response to this crossover, and that's probably the strength in it.
Yeah, well said. Well said. Well, why don't you take the next one? It's an email from Christy.
Yeah, Christy wrote in. She said, I think overall this crossover felt really ambitious, very meta, sometimes irritating, somewhat puzzling, and still a lot of fun. Yes, exactly what I was thinking. I'll tackle all of these emotions one at a time. Ambition, involving literally every Earth in the crisis, is not something that can really be topped ever again in a crossover. They took a big bite. They somewhat pulled it off. Think it would have worked better if they had had an entire season or miniseries to work through all the storylines and characters, so it didn't feel rushed. A lot of jumping around, especially at the beginning, and it would have been cool to spend more time at each location. One of the casualties involving so many shows means that there were so many characters that they were barely there just because of the time and budget constraints. We barely saw Diggle, Dinah, and Renee until hour 5. And as for meta, I lost count of how many times the characters mentioned being in crossovers and fighting together in previous years. By the fifth hour, it's a tad tiring. Irritation. My biggest gripe is how they handled Oliver. His first death felt so hollow to me, both because there's no way it was going to stick and also because it kind of happened off screen. Having the team try to use the Lazarus Pit was predictable, but the end result was unfamiliar to me. I don't know anything about a Spectre, how it's possible he suddenly became one, and I was willing to go along with it and thought his role was really cool in Hour 4 with helping the team and providing advice. And then his second death happened, once again without anyone from Team Arrow present. I didn't understand what even killed him. Creating a new Earth? We didn't see any stab wounds, and I initially thought the blast from killing the Anti-Monitor was enough to kill him, but the Anti-Monitor was still alive. So why did his Spectre persona immediately disappear? The only positive here is that at least this time he died on his own episode. Also in this category is the annoying inclusion of a ridiculous blue furry animal that I had forgotten all about.
Yeah.
Puzzling. Is it just me, or did the final hour feel like an epilogue or just an afterthought? After having the big climactic battle in Hour 4, fighting yet another swarming army of Anti-Monitor ghosts just didn't have the same impact. Also, how did Ryan Choi survive in battle without any armor or fighting skills?
Exactly.
As for fun or the best parts, there were plenty of super cool moments. I got so excited seeing Lucifer and Ezra Miller. I almost couldn't believe what I was seeing. Even with all my gripes with Oliver, I thought all the tributes to him in the final hour were really well done. It was so weird not having him there to suit up along with everyone else, but his presence was definitely felt. Also, the president recognizing his sacrifice was really cool. I thought the sequence with 90s Flash and Barry and Black Lightning was excellent and really increased the stakes and brought out emotions. I think that was such a cool way to summarize it, breaking it down by emotions, Christy. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Christy. I really, really like what you had to say, and I agree so strongly with a lot of your points, good and bad, like the ones you complained about, but the ones that you loved. Yeah, definitely. You put it all together really nicely. All right, our last crisis feedback comes from Jen, the Time Chronos.
Hi, Arrow Podcast, Flash and Camille. This is Jen from Long Island, New York, a.k.a. Time Chronos, trying to, call back in, because last time I tried to use the speak pipe, and I didn't realize that was really only 30 seconds that it gives you to say anything. So, Mike, I just want to call in, since I haven't, called in a while. Just wanted to say how much I've really loved, the whole season of, Arrow, and anytime, it's really great when, Stephen Amell would get emotional. I would feel emotional, every time, he would say goodbye to someone, I just feel aw, because I've been watching this show since, the very beginning. I stuck with it, even when it had its ups and downs, and, then, this past season was, really good, that it gradually started getting better. And, just want to say, I was finally able to watch, the Crisis of Infinity Earths live last night. And I kind of really wish they would have given us, 2 hours worth. Because, they only gave us an hour each episode, and it's after it was over, And I still can't believe that, Oliver, died the first episode. I'm like, what? I'm like, he can't have died so soon. I can't believe that. Especially, like you said, they have so many different, Earths and whatever realities. And even, when Sarah went and visited, one of the planets to get the baby, and she bumped into another Oliver, and I felt bad for that one who never, knew anything. I'm, going, oh, so sad. So I'm hoping that, we, run into, many Olivers at this point. And I have a theory, I don't know if anybody else put it out there, but, in the beginning of the theme, he keeps saying that he has to become something else or someone else. I think that's how they're gonna, do something. Maybe not save him, but, he'll have, a plan, maybe, that he has to become someone else. And they keep showing the Deathstroke mask, in the theme, you know, opening, that I'm like, what if he, like, you know, disguises himself as Deathstroke, so he, like, you know, twists the whole thing that he says, ha, you said that I had to die. I'm like, well, maybe that wasn't the case, you know, so I'm still here, so, haha, I would think that would be really cool, you know, send off. So that way he doesn't really have to die, that he's still out there in the universe kind of thing, you know, and this time I think I really, like, you know, liked Mia this time. I wasn't really too keen on the whole future cast. You know, I really love William. I mean, it's like, he really makes you feel like he was, like, the young actor also. You know, that he had that, you know, experience, whatever. And after watching the Kevin Smith, like, talk show afterwards, which is pretty cool that they did it, like, you know, the Walking Dead show has their own, like, talk show afterwards. But then he was talking to the actress who played Mia, and she was saying how at least she did go back and, like, try to watch, like, the old episodes from the beginning to try to get the nuances of, like, Oliver and Felicity. Like, that, I always like it when they do that, that they try to get the feeling of the original. So, you know, she kind of grew on me at this time, I think, finally. You know, especially at the last Purgatory episode and this one. Yeah, so it's like, and I was hoping they'd give her, like, a better suit, too. It's like, they gave her, like, a really dark suit. You really couldn't tell anything. And it's like, I hope that they give her a hood, you know, after a while, you know, in honor of the hood, you know, the arrow. You know, and maybe hide her blonde hair and give her a mask or something. It's like, she's so, like, out there. But anyway, and also, the one I love to hate through the whole season was, I mean, I didn't really hate her. It's like Lila, you know. And I thought that her outfit was cool as the Harbinger, you know. So it's like I said, I hope to look forward to getting to see more, you know, of Oliver in the Finiers. Hopefully that wasn't it, just it. And I look forward to seeing all the Smallville people and, you know, all the other stuff. And I hate the fact that we only got to see 2 seconds of the original Robin, Burt Ward. I was like, that's it? Ugh. Anyway, I always look forward to, like, hearing you guys, and I, you know, hope to hear more from you in the future. And Flash, I had a question. I'm like, were you going to be doing a Star Wars podcast of The Mandalorian? Because that show's been awesome. I have 2 words for you guys. Baby Yoda. I have spoken. Bye-bye.
Boy, she had a lot to say.
Yes.
I will answer your question right now. Yes, I have a podcast covering The Mandalorian. It is called The Mandalore. Look for it on any of your podcast feeds or, you know, search or whatever. But yeah, The Mandalore podcast, and we've already covered it. Go check it out. I'd love to have you aboard there with us. Huh. Yeah. Wow, she said a lot. I'm pretty sure that one sounded like it came in after the first 3 episodes before the break.
Yeah, I think so.
Mm. But she had a pretty good theory about Oliver becoming something else. So I'm kind of curious that, you know, she's probably high-fiving herself. Yeah, I called that.
Absolutely. Well, awesome. Thank you, everyone, who sent in feedback. I had a really great time kind of recapping the crossover with you there. And
yeah.
Fortunately for us, it doesn't end there. We actually do have a new episode to discuss tonight.
Well, can I ask, Cammy, I want to know, because you got to be part of the crossover podcast for parts 4 and 5. I wasn't able to be there. I'm wondering if you can... Since we just went through feedback, can you give us, you know, in whatever length you want to talk about it, an overall feeling of what this crossover did from an Arrow perspective? I want to know if you were truly happy or satisfied, or did you really walk away from this feeling like, yeah, they didn't do Arrow justice?
I don't think they did Arrow justice, but I guess I didn't expect them to, because the crossovers never do. Arrow is generally in the position where they give in crossovers and spinoffs. They don't receive. They give the platform for other characters to shine or to learn or to grow or whatever. But Arrow doesn't ever really benefit from a tangible plot perspective from a crossover or a spinoff or anything like that. Yeah. And that's okay. I think I was just disappointed that they continue to put big moments for Arrow on crossovers because the crossovers don't benefit Arrow. So we've had the Oliver and Felicity wedding on a crossover when that didn't need to be on a crossover. We prefer that on our own show. We've had major deaths and moments on there, and now we have Oliver's death on there. And I sympathize and kind of almost agree with, in some sort of pie in the sky way, with those who are theorizing that that wasn't really even counted as Oliver's death, and there'll be some sort of final death or moment for him in the finale, and hopefully that's true. But I guess I just wish that, not that there was more Arrow on the crossover. I don't mind that we don't really get to take center stage or benefit. I almost wish that there was just less big Arrow moments on the crossover. They're taking the big moments without giving us the payoff. And I think we'll have in our feed, we have the first half already of the crossover talk with GSM hosts, and we'll be posting the second half as well. Mm-hmm. You kind of hear the same from the others, that Arrow really just doesn't benefit from this.
Yeah, and just on your point about all the big moments for Arrow that are happening, they're also happening on the other shows' episodes, like on the Flash or the Legends episode. So they're not even written by our Arrow writers, and that's why they never really hit hard. They never get the emotion they deserve, because they're not even written by our own team or directed by our team. And it's just, it's just been such a letdown for Arrow, always kind of getting the back shelf treatment in all the crossovers. And like you said, they're for spinoffs and, you know, backdoor pilots and all that. Arrow has always been the launching pad for that. And it's just not fair. I mean, I get it. Arrow is the show that started all of these shows, but I mean, does it have to be the one that continually take a back seat to all these other shows when it's truly is the leader of these shows? I don't know. There's something I wanted to answer, though, because a lot of feedback, both during the first three episodes and the feedback we got now, a lot of people were saying they did not feel emotional when Oliver died the first time, and that scene didn't hit home, it didn't work. And if you haven't read, there's an interview with Stephen Amell that I think I posted on the Arrow Squad Facebook page. He actually talks about that and why that scene didn't work. He acted that scene alone, to tennis balls on sticks. He didn't even have actors with him in his death scene when the camera was focused on him. And that's because of scheduling and budgeting reasons. Apparently, the girl who plays Supergirl and Barry Allen, those actors were already beyond their allotted time to be on these episodes. They had to leave and go back to their own TV shows and do whatever. So poor Stephen Amell is sitting there having to act a final emotional death scene talking to a tennis ball. And he was very upset with that. If you read the interview, he's very disappointed. He's very upset. He's angry that that's what they had to do. And that's why the emotion doesn't hit. So it's very interesting. And it's frustrating as a viewer, as someone who loves all of these shows, that this is what they're doing in the crossover and forcing these actors to have to be in tough situations when it's just not fair. It's not fair to them. It's not fair to the show. And so I found that very interesting. It's an interesting interview. And then if you haven't listened to his podcast that he guests on with Michael Rosenbaum, the Inside of You podcast, he really opens up about a lot of feelings about the ending of Arrow and the impact it's had on him. It's a fantastic interview. And it's, you know, he actually suffers a nervous breakdown right in the middle of the podcast and has to leave and come back 2 weeks later and finish the show. It's if you like Stephen Amell, listen to that show. It'll really get to you. Now for the crossover, my little Coles notes thing, there was some great stuff. I loved the 90s Flash stuff. That whole sequence when Black Lightning first shows up and he's on the treadmill and he becomes the Flash that has to die, and he's the one who makes that big sacrifice. Those moments with John Wesley Shipp have always been some of the best moments on The Flash. And for him to get to be the hero in that particular time was fantastic. That thing, I think, was my favorite scene of the entire five episodes. We had some great moments for Brandon Routh becoming Superman again, especially the ending one at the very end of episode five, when he gets to fly off around the Earth in his original movie costume. Absolutely loved that. I mean, that was fantastic for him. And, you know, there were some good things like that But I'm with you, Cammy. What they did for Arrow and what a lot of our feedbackers are saying, they just did not give Arrow the respect it deserves, especially in its final season as we're trying to say goodbye to Oliver. We're trying to say goodbye to the Arrow show itself. It did not get enough exposure during this crossover. It's supposed to be centered around Oliver. It's supposed to be around him dying and the show coming to an end. And it was on the back shelf the entire time. So it really disappointed me there. And that's pretty much my wrap up.
Well, we have lots more crossover talk floating around. I know Flash mentioned he has some thoughts on his Legends podcast. We have the other crossover podcast that we've been on. So you can go find that, where you can also let us know on our Facebook page if you have further thoughts on the crossover. But for now, 42 minutes into this, we need to talk about tonight's episode, don't we, Flash?
We do. Let's play this right here.
We now return you to our regularly scheduled podcast, currently in progress.
There you go.
Perfect. Well, I think to transition us to talking about tonight's episode, we should just start with our ratings and just kind of get back into it. Do you want me to kick us off on this and maybe try to pull us onto a positive note?
You can. Yeah, we're going to, let's just say that this is Arrow Season 8, Episode 9, titled Green Arrow and the Canaries. And go for it, Cammy.
Yeah, absolutely. So this was a difficult episode for me to rate because it was a backdoor pilot, but also an Arrow episode. So I'm giving it a 7.5 out of 10 for a backdoor pilot, but only a 6 out of 10 for an Arrow episode. I think this was a necessary explanation and exposition piece of the story. It allowed the spinoff to hit the ground running, or will allow the spinoff to hit the ground running when it actually starts. We'll have a fast-paced season because we have the setup here. That was a luxury afforded to all other Arrow spinoffs, the chance to set up the premise on Arrow using Arrow's time and then hit the ground running with characters everybody's already familiar with when their spinoff starts. So I won't begrudge them offering the same luxury to Green Arrow and the Canaries, because that is Arrow's own spinoff. So with that said, it does still seem disconnected from both the crossover and from the finale. The fight scenes were fun, the plot was simple, just kind of detached, and the characters fit the premise reasonably, so that's about as best as can be expected at this point in the process. Mia, Smoke Queen, or whatever she's going by now, absolutely carries this episode well, and I'm looking forward to more characters joining the spotlight and building future Team Arrow, because I think that depth of characters is really what was lacking here, in addition to the detachment. But I'll continue watching.
Yeah, I think you said it well there. And I kind of feel the same with you. I'm only rating this a 6. This didn't feel like Arrow. And that's because it was so blatantly a pilot episode for the new spinoff. And put aside everything we've said about Arrow always having to be the one that launches a new show, I'm really upset that they take a 10 episode season of Arrow, and we actually are only, if you look at it, we're only getting 7 Arrow episodes, because we've lost a couple to backdoor pilots, to Crisis. We're getting 7 episodes of Arrow in our final season, so I'm upset that we yet had to burn another one to introduce a new show. I just think they should leave the pilot for the pilot. Launch it in its next September as the pilot episode, and you don't need to burn one of our Arrow episodes for it. You just don't. Now, I liked some things of this episode. Of course, I love seeing Dinah again, and I like the Laurel character. I was a little bit confused, and we'll probably talk about it, which Laurel it is we're getting. Are we getting the Earth
right?
Laurel?
I was confused about that too. Spoiler alert.
Yeah, so they did not explain that very well, but I still liked her performance. I liked what she was doing, and just the position she was taking on things. It felt so much apart from Arrow, and I think you used the word detached. This did not feel like Arrow at all to me. It was so ultra modern, so fast paced, so just had this weird futuristic edge to it that it didn't feel grounded at all. It just really set me back, like, what am I watching? I don't know if I am enjoying this vibe that it's trying to create, and this funkadelic psychedelic, I don't know, whatever they're doing, this just ultra modernized feel. And it just, I was having trouble getting into it. So I was enjoying the characters. I was enjoying seeing them come together. I agree with you. Mia really took the lead on this one. I would like to have felt a lot more depth to everything. It just, everything felt so surface and so flying through by the seat of your pants. It was a weird one. It was a really weird episode for me. It just wasn't Arrow. I don't know what else to say.
It came at a time when we were really kind of wanting to return to Arrow, because we've been deprived of it for so long because of the crossover and the hiatus. So that may have come at a bit of a disservice. I think it was perhaps more Arrow than the crossover is about as much as I can give it. But then again, it is a spinoff, and maybe, they don't want that spinoff to be Arrow. So I'm curious to get into more of what elements of the spinoff you do like. Where do you think there is a nugget of something that is perhaps unique and apart from Arrow, but still good? I suspect we'll find that in what your favorite moment is.
I think you highlighted it perfectly there. They are trying to separate this from Arrow. I think rather than trying to just recreate Arrow again with a couple of Arrow characters and then introduce new ones, it felt to me like they were really trying to separate themselves from Arrow and create a brand new show. Because I guess a lot of people feel like Arrow should have ended a season or two ago, and it's been going downhill ever since. So maybe that's part of their feeling to make this so different. I don't know, but I really like how you put that point in there. And that's probably why I'm feeling the way I'm feeling, is because they are trying to separate themselves from Arrow and make a brand new show with a whole different feel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Can I flip it around and have you go first then for favorite moment? I'm just curious what your favorite piece would be then. What did you like?
Yeah, well, and I think with favorite moments, chronologically, mine comes quite a bit before yours. So we'll do it that way. Here's our favorite moments. Now, I picked a scene with Laurel talking to Mia when Mia was crying and she comes in. I like the scene because Laurel, it's the Laurel with her attitude, like, oh my God, I can't deal with emotions right now. She initially starts off with that, but then she becomes the newer version of herself and actually offers some advice, some support, and realizes that, hey, Oliver's gone. This is his kid. I have to help his kid become the type of person that he knows she can be. And I just like that. I love the interaction between these two, and hopefully we get more of that. Hopefully this is a relationship that can develop, because Mia is going to have to count on Laurel and Dinah to be able to, raise up through her experiences and stuff. So anyway, I just like this moment, so we'll play that for you right now.
Oh God, are you crying?
What the hell are you doing here?
I guess it's that feelings thing or whatever. Look, I'm sorry.
JJ broke up with me. If you even care.
I do care. You're strong enough to get through this. You're strong enough to get through anything. I've seen you do it.
Is that why you woke me up?
Mia, I spent so much of my life choosing the easy path. And for me, that meant becoming Black Siren and destroying things and killing people. It's not a good look.
Not exactly what I'm doing here.
Okay, but can you honestly tell me that you were happy with your life before I woke you up? Truly?
I spent my whole life looking at these pictures of my dad. All of the amazing things he did for the city. What a hero he was. Wondering how I could possibly live up to that. In anything I chose to do. And so I chose to do nothing. You'd probably be so disappointed in me.
I doubt that. Your father, he wanted you to be happy. I mean, he gave you all this. But I also think he wanted you to have a choice. I am not gonna sugarcoat it for you. Being a hero kind of sucks. And it never gets any easier because it is the hardest thing that you can do.
Then why do it?
For me, it gave me a purpose. And that's why I woke you up. So that you could have the chance to realize your own. Mia, this is your city. And you're the Green Arrow.
See, that was the most depth we got out of this episode, and that's why I picked this scene. It was two characters really starting to develop their relationship together.
I love the music, the background music in that scene, because I would say that that music was very type Arrow. And I would also say that for all of your dislikes of this, you did pick a very, like, meaningful, substantial piece. It wasn't just a one-line joke or something.
Yeah, well, I didn't hate the episode. I just, it, like you said, it detached me from Arrow because we were wanting Arrow so much, like you said. So it just took me, I'm going to have to watch it one or two more times to maybe get the feel for it again. But this scene was a good Arrow scene between two characters, when Arrow has always been good at developing the relationships on their show without being overly fluffy, without being overly politically correct, push in your face kind of stuff. They've just been grounded and well laid out characters. So this, I appreciated that sequence for sure.
Absolutely.
And how about you?
Well, as you said, mine does come a good bit later in the episode. In fact, mine is the very end of the episode. So we'll go ahead and play it, and then we'll talk about it.
All right.
I can't believe it's been 20 years since he sacrificed himself to save the city.
Who's that?
I'm just the Star, the Globe, the Gazette, Byline, Channel 52. They all want to know if I'm the Green Arrow.
Of course they do.
And isn't it a little misogynistic that they're not calling you as well? I mean, come on, guys. It's 2040.
Oh, my God. You brought the pet rock.
Excuse me, are you referring to the Hosen? This is the closest thing we have to a family heirloom. Passed down from Dad to Aunt Thea to Mom and to me. Show some respect, please.
May I see it?
Yes, you may.
Thank you.
That was kind of what I found to be the moment that felt uniquely Green Arrow and the Canaries. So it's a clear spinoff. She's a very different Green Arrow than before, but still close enough to Arrow to where I see the reason to watch. I loved the callback to the Hosen. I loved them showing Oliver's costume in that scene. I loved the sudden increased stakes at the end because William gets kidnapped right after that.
Yes.
It was a perfect ending to the episode, honestly. It single-handedly made me want to continue watching the series despite some of the flaws in the episode as overall. And interestingly, to go along with the Thea mentioned in their little dialogue there, I realized while watching the scene, Mia also sounds a bit like Thea sometimes. She's obviously quite a blend of Oliver and Felicity, but her voice in this incarnation of her, where she gets to be, you know, the rich socialite, I can tell that the actress definitely is touching on a bit of season one and season two Thea in portraying that, which I think is lovely as the carrier of the Queen family.
Yeah, that's a nice connection to where Arrow started in its roots, because now this new show is starting in its roots. So it was a nice connection in that sense that she is part of that family. I'm glad you picked that scene, because William and Mia were some of the best parts about the future flash forwards.
Mm-hmm.
Last season, that, you know, just seeing them together and develop their relationship. And I so hope William continues to be a supporting character in the spinoff. I hope by having him here in this episode means he is going to be part of the show.
Mm-hmm. I hope he's a regular. I found him to be the second most interesting thing in the whole episode, other than Mia. But we have discussion points that will touch on that. And I'm okay. So excited to get into these. I've been waiting this whole time.
Okay. I will save my thoughts for the end, the way the episode ended too. I'm sure you've got it in here somewhere.
Yes, absolutely. So let's start by talking about the Green Arrow. So this is Mia's origin story 2.0. We see her following a similar pattern to Oliver, from a life of luxury to a dark path via flashbacks to becoming or re-becoming a vigilante. But for Mia, this all happens in one episode. What did you think of that pacing? What did you think of the pacing of this one episode?
Well, a mix. It a little too fast for me. I would like to have seen her, if they are going to follow the same path that her father went through, I would like to have seen them stretch out a little bit more. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit convenient to have Laurel, you know, puncture her with a ring that is now the tech version of whatever Martian Manhunter can do with his memory repair, whatever you want to call that. It's a little bit convenient to have a tech device to do that and have everything be caught up that fast, but they did just do that in the crossover with Martian Manhunter replenishing everyone's memories as well. So I guess it's fine. They did that. It's just, I don't know. That's where I'm a mix. I mean, it happens fast enough that it allows this new show to jump off from a new starting point and just get going. Cause maybe people don't want to get dragged through an entire season of her going through the dark, you know, having to fall from being a rich snob and learning all those lessons. Maybe they're like, yeah, we've been there, done that. Let's take a different path this time. So I in the end, I'm okay with it. I'm okay with the pacing of it. It just felt a bit off a little, I guess.
It felt really fast, but I guess I understood that with it being a reboot and they wanted to get her to the place where she's suited back up, but not create this whole huge origin story once again of how she suits up, because we already saw that.
Yeah.
It did make me wonder where the spinoff goes from here with her suited back up. You know, she's got more to her backstory than just being a cage fighter, but she does now have that. And she's got more to her backstory than being a rich socialite, but she does now have that. So she's quite a mix. How do you think her character as the Green Arrow will change?
Well, here's the difference, because how many seasons now have we been dealing with Oliver being kind of poor? And, you know, like, it's really only the first two seasons where he's the rich kid getting to play a superhero. That's where she is now. I'd like them to expand that a little bit. Okay, so this is the new multiverse. Her family's still rich. She still has... I love that they brought the old mansion back. I've missed seeing that house. So it'll be interesting to see where they go from there. Is she going to get to play with the money and be the rich type of superhero that Green Arrow is, that a lot of our superheroes are, Batman and stuff like that? They're super rich people that get to be crime fighters at night. How her character will change, I think she needs to learn. She still is a fairly young, new superhero. So I think she's going to have to learn how to handle situations, how to deal with people, how to know when to back off, how to know when to run into a fight, or how to ask for help even. And that's why I said I like that Laurel and Dinah are there, because they've got so many years of experience to help catch her up fast and get her to Oliver's level a little bit quicker. So I think that's the path I see for her, is relying on them. I mean, that's why the show is going to be called Green Arrow and the Canaries, because it is a team. It is now not just Arrow. It is now a team where they're going to have to, I think, rely on each other even more than they did in Arrow.
Mm-hmm. I think it'll be interesting to see how they portray the Green Arrow and Canary partnership in this context where it's very different than what we saw before. It's going to be a different partnership than before. There's multiple canaries, and maybe they will all represent different aspects of the canary personality. But
yeah,
with Mia, we see this opposite, where we have multiple different kind of personalities and lives in one. She does still have all her original memories and training now, such as her work with Nyssa, her time with the flashback Oliver and Felicity. It'll be interesting to see how that's blended going forward, now that she has a much more classic Oliver Queen young adulthood of being rich and spoiled, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And how much are they going to pull on that for storylines? Are we going to see little mixes of that come into the writing that she, yes, she was trained by Nyssa. Yes, she got to grow up or have some training time with Oliver that she's going to be able to pull on from. You know, will we see any scenes at all with her and Felicity? I don't know, but it is going to be interesting to see where they go with that. Just story-wise, and you know, how much are they going to pull on it? How much is this going to leapfrog her faster into becoming the Green Arrow and becoming that type of hero where it took Oliver 8 seasons to get to that point of being the ultimate hero? Yeah, it is going to be interesting. I still am curious about what and how they're going to handle that.
Yeah, and something else I suspect you might be curious about is Dinah now owns a karaoke bar, and we got an entire scene of her serenading you specifically from the piano.
Yep, she was singing for me.
So Dinah owns a karaoke bar. Laurel has tech from Mars or something. We have the beginning of a new Canary team. What did you think of the backstory for our Siren and Black Canary team up?
Well, how much backstory do we have? Because Dinah really didn't have a clue what was going on. I mean, Siren had to come in and kind of remind her of a few things. It's interesting. They kind of wiped Dinah's slate clean because nobody knows who she is. She has no identity at all. So she gets to live in this new timeline completely scot-free with any history attached to her. So that's kind of interesting. What she does with that, I don't know. But I tell you one thing, I'm happy that she's got her canary cry back. Dinah's just not the same without it. You know, so that was pretty cool. Now for Siren, it's interesting that she's almost the wisdom, that she's almost going to be the, what do you call it, the center of the wheel where all the spokes are coming out from. You know, she's like the glue to hold everything together. And just very interesting to see that, because she was always so sketchy and so which way is she going to go, you know, and all the trouble that people had with whether they're redeeming her or not. Well, look at where she's at now. That's why I like that scene that I chose, because they're really letting us know this is where she's at. She's come full circle. She is now the hero, and she's going to take, I think, a very strong leadership role here.
Mm-hmm. I think I like that their presence is still a bit of a mystery for both of them, particularly Dinah. And I like that they're giving her a chance for her character to be far removed from being a police captain. I think that they had started to kind of box her into a corner almost with that. Do you think they'll continue to keep her away from being a part of the police force? Or do you think that she's going to start to merge identities with what we saw before from her?
I didn't get that feeling at all. I mean, it didn't seem like she had this pull to go back to the police force. I mean, that, as far as I know, the Canary in the comics never was a police captain ever.
Right.
I don't know. I'm pretty sure she wasn't. So maybe they want to rewrite that here. Like you just said, they realized the few mistakes that they let her character down in Arrow. So now they wrote this as a chance for them to do right by her, which could be interesting. And it could be fascinating to see where she goes. Does she become the true Canary? Because Siren is not going to be a Canary. She is Black Siren. That's who her character is. So this allows Dinah to full on become Canary.
Yeah, it gives her a chance at another Canary journey as well. And Siren, as you're saying, you're absolutely right. She is Siren, first and foremost. She's the character who has the clearest identity thus far. And she's time traveled in some way, and there's a few things still unanswered there that I'm sure they'll get to in the show in regards to what she can do, where she's getting her tech and powers. It's all very hand wavy at this point.
I hope so.
But what's mostly a mystery, and you already touched on this earlier, she seems to be mixing her Siren identity with Laurel One's identity. Do you think that's intentional? Are they supposed to be some sort of hybrid, or is she just really confused?
Yeah, that's fascinating, because they've rebirthed this universe, and does that mean there is a Laurel out there somewhere, a Laurel Lance walking around? Because if there is, then she can't be a hybrid. But if there is not, if she is, by them merging all of the Earths and she is now the only Laurel we have, then she could be a mix of all those personalities. And that's why we see her turning, you know, having a bit more of a split personality in a sense, if you could call it that. Because like in my scene, she started out her normal snarky siren self, but then she switched into her caring Laurel self. So I hope they explore that. It'd be neat to see what they do with that. Because, yeah, it's her, even though she seems to have the most fleshed out character beginning here, it's also the most up in the air as to where it comes from.
Yeah. I mean, they start a lot of questions that they don't quite answer, and it's completely fair to do that for a pilot. Mm-hmm. But I think that at least because they have characters that we've seen many times before, they have a bit of a starting point. And they do have some other familiar faces on here as well. It could kind of be Green Arrow and the Canary and friends, right? We see a bit of the Diggle brothers. We see William Queen, but very few other side characters, particularly no new side characters that we haven't seen before, really. This was a very Mia and the Canary-centric episode, but are there other characters, new or existing, you'd like to see show up or return?
Well, it's kind of obvious if you know me at all, as I'd like to see Roy make an appearance, right? I mean, where was he in the crossover? He wasn't even mentioned, mm-hmm. let alone show up and be there for Oliver's ending. So I'd like them to answer that, at least in our Arrow finale, and then give us a hint as to whether he might show up in the future or not. I have no idea. Even looking outside the TV show, I don't know contracts or anything, what's going on. I haven't heard anything about that stuff. So definitely Roy. We saw William, so we got William. We got a little bit of JJ, like we're going to talk about with the way it ended there. Should we talk about JJ right now?
Yeah, let's dive into it.
Because I was feeling really uncomfortable with what they started with him. I just, I couldn't buy him as a romantic lead at all. And I couldn't buy the two of them being together. It just felt icky. I don't know. It felt really weird. And then when they switched at the end, that to me was the biggest Arrow feeling, the turning point when he switched and got his memories back. And that to me was very, very Arrow writing there. And I thought, okay. This is how it should be. And if he's going to be one of the main villains and they're going to do the whole Deathstroke thing with him and continue that part of the story, because we only got a little bit of it. So, yeah, I mean, he's there. Did we get Connor? Did we get...
got a little bit of Connor.
Yeah, you know, Renee's daughter. I mean, I hope they're there. This was the team that they gave us in the flash forward. So, and we right. really like them together. So I hope that we get to see an Arrow cave and we get to see this team come together. And take on JJ. That would be a good start for the show. Why not? That's when it began.
Yeah, we've seen some of the cast post pictures together that they're calling themselves, you know, future Team Arrow. Kat McNamara, who plays Mia, along with William and JJ and Connor and Zoe, and also perhaps grown-up baby Sarah Diggle as well.
Yeah.
They all may be kind of playing a part in this. And I think that sort of this young future Arrow is going to be the team that's going to draw us into this. And the contrast will be the Canaries, who will fill in the role that previously we had seen, you know, Detective Lance fill or Moira fill, where there's somebody who's a little bit older and wiser and perhaps rougher around the edges who's helping guide them.
Yeah. Like you just mentioned Moira and Lance. Like, we have no idea if in this new multiverse, if those characters are back alive again. How great would it be to have Moira come in and play grandmother?
That would be fabulous. Or yeah. Mama Smoke.
Yeah. Again, bring her back. Yeah. Why not?
That'd be fabulous.
Exactly.
Well, there is still a lot more we could say about this, but I would like to give our Arrow Squad a chance to say it. We got a lot of transmissions this week. You want to go through it?
Yeah, let's get to those. All right, where are we kicking it off?
Well, in a wonderful surprise, we got Aaron's feedback for the episode in time to include it in our transmissions for this week.
Wow.
Our friend Erin writes in. She says, I give this episode a 4 out of 10. I liked Laurel 3.0 because her siren side seems to be her main personality. But on the whole, I did not like a lot in this episode. I could be argued into a 5, but I couldn't go more than that. Even a 5 is arguably generous, I feel. A quick list of what I liked. Laurel 3.0, easily the MVP of this episode for me. Her calling John was probably my favorite bit, and without her this would have been unwatchable. Juliana showing her singing and piano playing skills, you go girl. And Dinah's bar being named the fishnet because in the comics Black Canary wears fishnet stockings as part of her costume.
Oh, awesome. I didn't even see that connection. Jeez, thank you, Erin. Now I love it even more.
She said she loves William because he does not disappoint in appearances. She likes Zoe being back, Dinah having her cry back. The concept of Helena Bertinelli would burn down the city if someone hurt her child, because accurate. The title card was decent. And here's what she didn't like. As a Supergirl fan, it annoyed her that they bottled John's power, because that's a step too far. She also did not like JJ becoming Deathstroke again, or at least evil, because why? We already saw that plot. It's not interesting to go there again. Mm-hmm. She also says, if we still have Connor, why can't we have adult baby Sarah? You showed her, Crisis Writers. Where is she? Hold on to that thought. She also didn't like Dinah being pulled out of time again, because why? She doesn't understand why the plots for the spinoff need to go that route. The aspect of her pulling back before Zoe's death to reevaluate if she made the right choice and pulling others in the group is fine, but time travel seemed unnecessary. And Mia, she says, I don't know what the plan was with this episode, but they did not do the character any favors with her content. Random comments, she says. People are who they are. It doesn't matter the earth, and that's not your fault. Well, she says, if people are who they are, Laurel, then that means you're totally an anti-villain, right? Or an anti-hero at best. She also would like to see Laurel 3.0 marry a woman and be happy. She says, every time she interacted with Dinah, I was checking my watch to see what was the time until they made out. I absolutely got some chemistry off of the two of them. I get where she's going from. She says, William doesn't have to be the only gay character on this series, writers. Bisexuality is a thing. She says, she goes on to speculate about other ways that Laurel 3.0 could find happiness in a lovely wife as well. So all of this, I'm sure she'll be posting on our blog post for you to read and respond to as well. I love the theory, personally.
It's possible. That's all I'll say.
You want to take the next one? Dad L?
Yes. Dad L says, hello, Aero Squad. Interesting pilot. This show, if it is picked up, will have some challenges, I think. Can it be different enough from Aero to forge its own path, but still remain faithful to the legacy? Is saving Star City still a viable plotline? Remember that even Quentin Lance once had a meta comment that if the city's under attack, then it must be May. How many times can we see Star City being attacked and saved? Yeah, valid point. But at the same time, that's why each hero has their own city to save. And because, you know, when Aero went global, it was really, really bad. So they do have to keep it down to the city. We'll see what they do. He goes on, a few highlights for me. The Queen Mansion is back. I thought the Green Arrow statue looked great. Dinah's Clock Tower apartment was awesome. My rating is 7 out of 10, wait and sees. Dad L, last father of Krypton. Yeah, you know what? That statue was fantastic. Way better than the Laurel statue they did way back in whatever season that was that she got killed off. Great, great statue. And I did like Dinah's apartment. I would live there too. With her, yeah. Of course.
I was waiting for that comment.
Thank you, Dad L. Awesome thoughts as always. And then next up, Doodoo Gazler. What's he have to say?
He says, hey, Arrow Squad, how are you? Green Arrow and the Canaries had a great episode this week. Loved everything about it. The storyline was interesting. I like to see how the future has changed due to the crisis events. There's a lot of open questions that I want to know the answers for them, such as how did Dinah find herself in the future and why is she a singer or something? The only problem with this episode is it isn't a Green Arrow and the Canaries episode, but an Arrow episode. Where is Oliver? Yes, I know he's dead, and I'm glad he finally got the honor and respect he deserves at the end of the crisis, but this is still his show. If he will not appear at all in the final episode, no matter how good it would be, like this week's episode, it would be the most bizarre finale of any TV series ever. Oh,
man, there's no way. There's no way.
He goes on to say they need to find a way to bring him back next week and fix it. And by the way, I haven't watched next week's episode's trailer, so maybe I'm complaining for nothing, and it will be well known that Oliver will be in the finale of the series. Have a great weekend, Doodoo Geisler. Well, I did watch the trailer for next week, but Mr. Flash did not, so I will let you and Flash stay spoiler-free on that.
Yes, building up the emotions. It's welling up. I can feel it. All right, we got an email from Kate, and it's my turn to get to take a Kate email, and she says, "Hey guys, I thought the episode last night was pretty good, but it was far from perfect. The plot was weak, and there were some character choices made that made very little sense. 7 out of 10. So, there was really no beating around the bush. There are two major problems with the episode, the plot and Laurel. The plot was forced. Laurel supposedly came to the future to tell Mia and Dinah that Bianca was kidnapped and that if they didn't find her, the city would suffer. Well, if Sarah, you know, the one with the time chip, was already in the future, why couldn't she take the 5 seconds and save Bianca? It was not the most difficult of missions, so the reason why Laurel was even involved makes no sense. And past that, if it had to be Laurel who went to 24 to save Bianca, why did she necessarily have to bring in to other people who seemed to be happy with their lives? The threat did not seem big enough for her to need so much help, and yes, of course, there was foreshadowing for a bigger villain to be at play, but in the scope of characters' knowledge and actions, Laurel should have assumed she could do this herself. At maximum, she got backup from Dinah. Her bringing Mia in was so contrived, especially since at the time of waking her, Mia seemed happy. True, throughout the episode, it is revealed that Mia was lacking purpose and that Dinah was dealing with her own non-existence, but that was more of a justification as to why they both eventually agreed. Laurel had no way of knowing that they were dealing with that stuff, and she had no right to assume that it was for the best that all was revealed. And that brings me to Laurel. She had absolutely no right to force those memories onto Mia. She had to watch her father die and her fiancé kill her friend, Laurel, in revealing these memories to Mia, is also disregarding the dying wishes of Oliver. He sacrificed himself to give his children the life they couldn't have with him when he was alive. He wanted them to be safe and happy, and we all know that Mia, much like her parents, would have inevitably become a hero in some way. But for her to have zero choice in the matter not only loses her blissful ignorance, but also to watch as her father's sacrifice be turned into naught. And it only continues to grow worse for Laurel as she treats Mia as if she were a spoiled, lazy brat that is selfish and stupid. But Mia's only problem is that, in this reality, she has money. Felicity has still raised her to be a good and thoughtful woman. Mia is just less troubled than she was in the old 2040. She has not endured as much pain, but that has left her without a purpose. But these faults, if you could even call them faults, are constantly targeted by Laurel. Laurel is treating her like she should already be the Green Arrow, saving a city that hasn't needed a hero. Laurel is acting like Mia is worse than Playboy Ollie, but really, she just hadn't figured out what she wants to do with her life. She is 20, Laurel. Give her a break. Don't force painful memories on her and don't be a jerk to her because she doesn't respond by immediately putting on the suit her father gave her. I have been mad at Laurel before, but never this mad. The episode was really good other than that, though. I think it proved that there is a lot of space to explore and relationships to develop. I know everyone is obsessed with the Diggle Brothers love triangle, and I'm excited by that. I was impressed by the actor that plays JJ, and I was surprised at the level of chemistry he had with Kat. I was most excited for the brother-sister relationship she has with William. I think that a show more focused on FTA would be more successful. That being said, as a person who has previously been critical on Dinah, thought she has an interesting potential here. Now that she doesn't exist, she can focus on finding what she really wants.
She can form the canaries while she explores a new side of herself. Essentially, the writers wrote her a mini restart, and if the spinoff gets picked up, I hope they take advantage of this new beginning for her. I'm curious to see what happens with the spinoff, but I'm waiting patiently till the finale, praying they do Arrow and Elicity justice. And that is from Kate.
Thank you, Kate. And I would say that may have been the most kind of fleshed out critique of the episode so far in terms of really thinking through the actual plot. You and quite a lot of the others, we were kind of very character focused, which character we liked, which character we were interested in. Kate really kind of broke down the plot there in an interesting way in terms of what actually makes sense or didn't make sense.
Yeah. No, she's always been good at really putting it together. That's why we joke about people always being like third hosts on the show, because sometimes they can put things in better perspective than we can, because, you know, we're going off emotion sometimes or whatever. And, you know, I just love that they put so much thought into the feedback, our fans, and it's so appreciated.
Absolutely. And that brings us to the end of the penultimate episode of Arrow, but not quite the penultimate episode of Arrow. We've got something special up our sleeves, don't we?
Yeah, we do. We still have, we mentioned it at the top of the show that we've got a special episode. We wanted to remind everyone. Yeah, through the magic of podcasting, we were able to pause the show and decide when we're going to record. We're going to be recording Saturday morning, guys. All about Arrow and Arrow Squad. What has this meant for you and meant to you over these 8 seasons? If you've been with us all the way, please send us in your emotional thoughts, your farewells to the show, and the other feedback you see. We want to get it on the show. You have until, I guess, really late Friday night in time for me to get it and get it part of the show.
Yes, and we can't wait to chat about that and get all emotional about the end of Arrow one last time.
One last time. And we'll release that before the finale, guys, so that you guys have a chance to listen to everyone's thoughts and get yourselves all riled up and Kleenex in hand ready for the finale, because, you know, we're all not ready right now.
Getting ready for episode 10 of season 8, entitled Fade Out, which will air on January 28th, 2020.
Yep. All right, guys, that is all we got for you. Let's talk to you guys soon and see you next week. This is The Flash signing off.
And this is Cammy. Goodbye.
Arrow Squad is presented by Golden Spiral Media. You can find all our contact info, links, and feedback form at arrowsquad.com. We'd also love to have you leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. If you're looking for other great discussions about your favorite TV shows, check out our partner podcasts at goldenspiralmedia.com. As always, please share the show, and thanks for listening.